The Andy Poland Show.
We got to go after this with everything we got. They're going to come with everything they got.
I'll start off by saying I'm bored, I'm broke, and I'm back.
The Andy Poland Show on ESPN 630 starts right now.
Hey, look at that sunshine out the window, huh? Yeah, a lot of rain this morning, and I guess they were forecasting more for later today, but looks nice. See, I can give you the weather now. I don't know, was it a month ago, a month and a half ago, we moved to a new studio, which has windows. The studio that I was in for over 3 years is the old Ken Beatrice studio, the legendary Your Next studio. And they made some changes here around the office, shuffled some things around, and now have a studio with windows. So when it's sunshiny outside, I can tell you about it. You know, this was a little embarrassing early on in the days of sports radio. My first job was at WFAN. No, my first job in sports radio, I should say, because that was the first sports radio station. Started in 1987, and it was in the Kaufman Astoria Studios in Queens. And in fact, where the studios were, they used to shoot back in the 30s and the 40s. Esther Williams, who was a famous actress, did a lot of water films there. So this was a big swimming pool at one time, and it was way down in the dungeon of the Kaufman Astoria Studios. So I was doing some updates then and saying that the game against the Yankees were playing that day was in doubt because of the weather. And in fact, it was sunny outside, which was, of course, pointed out to me by Phil Mushnick, the media columnist who took some shots at a lot of people over the years and has been waging war against Mike Francesa for a long time. Still at it. I mean, Mushnick is still writing columns in the New York Post 40 years, 45 years after he started. Pretty amazing. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. We'll talk about the four playoff games and what's ahead. Football, enjoy while you can, because we got three games left. Two games next weekend, then we wait a week, and then the Super Bowl, and that's it. They put the balls and the shoulder pads away, and it's not real football again until September. Yeah, they'll trot out some exhibition garbage, and maybe you'd like to watch the Mannings in between the championship games and the playoffs. They're hyping. It could be good. They were showing up, by the way. I don't know if you saw this, but both Mannings were at least two playoff games, and one of them, the Giants and Eagles game, which was no contest. Eagles won 38-7. Peyton brought his son. Looks like he's about 10 or 11 years old. And Eli was there, too. And I'm sure they're shooting segments for whatever shows they're doing. I mean, they really have morphed into big-time media personalities. And Peyton is just great on television. Eli's surprisingly good. I was really stunned at the chemistry that they have. And as I say, I love the Manning cast. Pretty much watch it, except on the rare occasions that Washington is playing on Monday Night Football. But here's Peyton with his like 10, 11-year-old kid. He's wearing a Jalen Hurts jersey. Now, maybe that was intentional to take a shot at Uncle Eli, or maybe Peyton just said, hey, you know, you got your own money. People give you birthday gifts or whatever. You want to buy a Jalen Hurts jersey? Go ahead, Gai Gesund, as I like to say in my family. But there they were on the sidelines, and that was a funny look. It was on the right side, obviously, because Philadelphia just dominated that game. And I don't know if this has happened. Probably has, but I can't imagine that there have been too many more NFL games in history where the quarterback has thrown for 154 yards and his team scored 38 points with no pick sixes. You know, they had a couple turnovers there, but no big plays on defense to score and no kick returns, none of that. It was just that Philadelphia just plowed down the field. They had over 200 yards rushing, maybe like 230, and their two backs together gained over 200 yards. The aptly named Kenneth Gainwell had over 100 yards rushing for Philadelphia, and it was just a complete mauling. And you know, you could look at the Giants and say, well, you know, maybe they were paper tigers, maybe they weren't that good, or Philadelphia really is that good. And the two games that they played with Gardner Minshew, big difference than playing with Jalen Hurts. Now, Jalen Hurts is not 100%. It'd be interesting to see what happens on Sunday if the 49ers force Philadelphia into a lot of passing situations, because his shoulder is probably not going to be right until the offseason, and wouldn't be surprised if he needs some surgery. But when you're running like that, you don't have to throw very often, and he didn't. When you score 38 points with 154 yards passing, that tells you a lot. As statistics don't always tell the story of a game, but I think in that particular game just shows you just how the Giants were completely ineffective against Philadelphia's ground game. I want to really get rolling with this, and this is from the Bengals game yesterday as they went into Buffalo. And I guess Buffalo made it close a couple times, got it within seven, but it looked like Cincinnati to me just dominated this game. And when you're starting to compare the quarterbacks now, Joe Burrow looks like the guy. He does. You know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with Josh Allen. Would I love to have Josh Allen on Washington? Yes, absolutely. He's one of those guys. But Burrow is beginning to separate himself out from the pack. And he just has this way about him, this moxie, this confidence that he has. And also, the Bengals seem to know what they're doing. You know, for a long, long time, this was the team that was owned by Mike Brown, who was so cheap and wouldn't spend the money to make it a good team. Their practice facility is under a highway. And if you watch Hard Knocks, you know, you get kind of a picture of an organization which is, you know, kind of a discount operation. It's not a four-star hotel. But they have made some really, really right decisions. And I'll get to Ja'Marr Chase, but remember, Joe Burrow tore up his knee at FedEx Field. That's where he suffered the torn ACL his rookie year. And he came back the following year and led the Bengals to the Super Bowl, but he got sacked a whole bunch of times, got sacked again this year too. And the narrative has been, oh, God, they're going to get this guy killed. They got to draft offensive linemen. Well, they drafted Ja'Marr Chase, his old teammate at LSU, where they put together maybe the best season in the history of college football. The year that LSU won it all, they were awesome, just undefeated and awesome. And that was his number one target, was Ja'Marr Chase. They also had Justin Jefferson, which didn't hurt because he may be the best receiver in the league, or 1A, whatever you want to call him. But going for his guy turned out to be the right move. We're not talking about Joe Burrow getting sacked all the time, are we? We're talking about a dominating offensive performance. But here's what bothered me a little bit about yesterday. This constant kvetching going into the game about how that they felt like they were disrespected because they were already selling tickets for a potential AFC championship game in Atlanta between Buffalo and Kansas City. And that would have happened if Buffalo won yesterday. Kansas City took care of business on Saturday. I will get to Patrick Mahomes and his circumstance coming up shortly. But that was the expected matchup, that Buffalo would win at home and that they would have the AFC Championship game on a neutral field next week because of what happened with DeMar Hamlin a few weeks ago in Cincinnati. And, you know, the logistics of putting on an event like this pretty much force you to sell tickets in advance. I mean, there's just no way around. This is why they have 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl and a full year or more for the host committee to set things up. It's not you just don't put on a game in your backyard. There are things you have to do. So they were taking care of some of the logistics of selling tickets. Well, the Bengals decided that they were going to make a thing out of that. And I don't blame them for doing that, because these kind of motivating things, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But the buy-in of some people on this and the narrative of, oh, God, the league just disrespected them, is bunk. It's ridiculous. And Mike Greenberg, who likes to run to the front of the parade, put out this tweet yesterday as Cincinnati went up 14-0. And he said, not sure we've made enough of how much the Bengals felt like they were wronged by the league the last few weeks. And they have showed up today like they are making a point. Mike, you don't go into a playoff game to make a point. You go into the game to win the game. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to try to win the game. And if you need the motivation of this so-called lack of respect from the league, there's probably something wrong with you. You know, you need help if that's what you need to get yourself up for the game. And again, the league was in a very, very difficult position here. I mean, what do you do for the Buffalo Bills, who had this horrible tragedy, which fortunately is looking like it's going to turn out very, very well, incredibly well. DeMar Hamlin is alive. I don't know whether he'll play football again, but he was there in Buffalo yesterday and seems to be on the road to recovery. And I don't know how, you know, you make things whole again off a situation that was impossible. You could not have continued that game that night, and there was no way to get a full and fair conclusion to the game. So you had to do something that would be fair to the Buffalo Bills. And, you know, if you wanted to host the championship game since then, well, you should have won more games. You should have won all your games. If you won all your games, we wouldn't have this discussion. But you didn't. And so you have to deal with what was a very difficult situation for the league. The snark factor continued. And Burrow, supposedly, now they're going to make up T-shirts with this. You know, like, you got to send out refunds now, which is what he said right on the post-game interview, meaning that the people who bought seats in Atlanta are going to be due refunds on that hardy har-har. And even Zach Taylor, the coach, decided in his post game to be a little snarky about the whole thing, too.
We had our mindset to go play in Kansas City, and it is tough because they have to formulate the plans for coin tosses, and they got to formulate the plans for neutral site games, and we just keep screwing it up for everybody. And I hate that for people that have to endure all those logistical issues, and then we just keep screwing it up. So I'm sorry.
Ha ha ha. You know, I mean, look, it's hopefully not going to happen again, but it's something that the league was forced to deal with. And I don't think it was necessarily the wrong decision. And the fact that tickets were sold in advance, well, that just comes with putting on an event. You try and stage something. Now, there's an interesting column today from Albert Breer at SI.com. I guess it's his regular Monday morning quarterback. But, you know, anytime the league gets a sniff of more money, they're going to find a way to rake it in. And as we were leading up to this possibility of a game next week in Atlanta, the discussion began to center around, oh, wait a minute here. What if the league decided, rather than just hold Super Bowls on neutral sites, they'll hold championship games on neutral sites? That could mean more money. Well, I don't know exactly how much more money it would bring in for the league, but the Breer take on this is, well, how about this? That it serves as a dress rehearsal for potential Super Bowl sites. In other words, you put on a championship game in your city and you work out the kinks so that when you do get to host the Super Bowl, you're ready to do it. You've had this dry run. It's a little bit different. You're not going to have as many people coming in, and the fans from around the league aren't going to come in. It's primarily the two teams, but you will have people in your city for a few days, good for commerce. You know, cities are going to bid for these things. They're going to want them. And that'll bring in more money that can somehow be kicked back to the league, more merchandise, whatever it is. Yeah, they'll print out more T-shirts. Hey, the neutral site game. And, yeah, I mean, once they get their sights on that, there's no stopping them. So I could see that happening, and I could see that happening not too long from now. Jamar Chase yesterday should have had another touchdown. I'm not anti-replay. A lot of people I know say get rid of it, it doesn't work. And the Jamar Chase catch in the end zone where they ultimately ruled that he was bobbling the ball as he went out of bounds and wasn't a touchdown. And so Cincinnati had to kick a field goal. Didn't ultimately matter in the outcome of the game, but it made things more interesting for a little while. Chase talking yesterday after the game with Kimberly Martin, again on that theme of, hey, they disrespected us.
You compared Joe Burrow to Tom Brady, Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Talk to me about how number 9 looked today.
Man, he looks incredible, man. He's, you know, running, throwing the ball, and our run game went incredible today. So, you know, Joe did an all-around job of, you know, setting everybody up, making the corrections on blitzes and everything today. So it was a great game by him.
Joe Burrow also said, get ready to send those refunds back for that championship game. Yeah. You and I talked about how the people were overlooking you guys, but you guys were nobody's underdog.
Yeah.
For you to come in here to win this decisively, to run the ball as well as you did, to limit them to a few points, what was the statement the Cincinnati Bengals made today?
Yeah, you know, they tried to disrespect us with the ticket sales, and, you know, we wasn't having it. You know what I'm saying? We just came out here, proved everybody wrong, and basically step on people's necks, and that's what we're here to do. And we get to our goal, our ultimate goal is to be at the Super Bowl. We got one more game left to get there.
I was going to say, you guys are about to face the Kansas City Chiefs again in the AFC title game. What do you think about that matchup, and what is it about road games that the Cincinnati Bengals love so much?
I think that's when we're in our most poised moments, you know what I'm saying? Going against the opposite team's crowd, just hearing them scream, you know. I think we live for those moments. I think everybody does. And, you know, it's the lead for a reason. I think we got a good team for it.
Disrespected us with the ticket sale. Stop. Stop already. Running game, the Kimberly Martin points out there, 34 carries for Cincinnati, 172 yards. Joe Mixon over 5 yards a carry, 20 rushes, 105. And how about Samaje Perine? Remember, Samaje Perine was here, and Jay Gruden really liked him. He kept putting him out there, and people said, what are you doing with this guy, Samaje Perine? He's, you know, and ultimately they caught him, and he played on the Cincinnati team last year that went to the Super Bowl, and he's a big contributor, not just as a runner. He had 7 carries for 33 yards. He also caught 5 passes. Samaje Perine was not a pass catcher here. He was a running back coming out of Oklahoma, and he has proven to be a very valuable contributor to that team. They have found a way to take some reclamation projects like him, but also build the team around a quarterback who's one of those guys and maybe the guy. Joe Burrow may be the next great quarterback, and doing it in Cincinnati, you know, that was a backwater for the NFL for a long time, and they have become a team that right now looks to be the best team in the AFC. And with a hobbled Patrick Mahomes, got to like their chances going into Kansas City next week. Now, the Chiefs have been installed as an early 2.5-point favorite. Line obviously would have been bigger if Mahomes wasn't hurt. And what we saw him do miraculously on a high ankle sprain, hopping around, making handoffs, somehow limping his way through that game, and leading them to a victory on Saturday against Jacksonville. And Jacksonville, by the way, they're going to be good, too. Trevor Lawrence, he's going to be a really good quarterback. Last year was a waste with Urban Meyer. And now that he's got Doug Peterson, they're going to be tough. And they've got, you know, because they've been bad for so long, they got a lot of high draft picks that are starting to pan out for them. But you got to have one of those guys. And he looks like one of those guys. But Kansas City, more experienced, just better, and more weapons, and a better defense all around. Was able to close out the game. And I think if Mahomes had stayed healthy, that would have been a lopsided win, not a 7-point win. In fact, there was a point in the game early on. I thought of two things. One was watching Mahomes, you know, before he went down with the ankle. It was like Meadowlark Lemon running the Globetrotters against the Washington Generals. Now, Jacksonville was trying, obviously. But it seemed like he was pulling out all the tricks, like the ball on the string, the water bucket on the referee. It was whoop, 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 all over the place. The other thing I thought of, the way he was hitting Travis Kelce, you know, just, I think Kelce caught 14 passes in that game, and it looked to me like 30. I thought, you know, of Eddie Fainer. Eddie Fainer was a pitcher. Barnstorming team he had, the king in his court. And it was a softball team made up of, I believe, 4 players. Eddie had a catcher, he had a shortstop, and he had an outfielder. And he would take on full teams and beat them because he was that good of a pitcher. And I thought, you know, if you trotted Mahomes out there with, like, Travis Kelce, a wide receiver, a center, maybe a guard and a tackle, he might be able to beat you with 5 or 6 guys. I mean, I know that's ridiculous, but that's how locked in he was on Kelce. And how the two of them were just making magic down the field. Now, we'll see what happens. You know, maybe Chad Henne can actually beat Cincinnati. I don't think so. But how many guys can come in cold off the bench and lead a 98-yard drive like that? And Henne hasn't played meaningful snaps in over a year, but knows the offense, knows the weapons, and knows how to find number 87. And when you do that, you can do a lot of really good things. All right, we'll get to Dallas. Also, another note on the Bills, which we'll get to, what happened with Stephon Diggs after the game. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. Tony is in today. It is a beautiful morning. Sunshine streaming through our windows here on Jennifer Street. We'll talk more about the playoff games and a whole lot more as we roll through the morning right here on ESPN 630.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing to say.
Congratulations.
Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
The Andy Poland Show on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
9 to 11 every day. Tony's on today at 11 o'clock. You know, it was 40 years ago yesterday that the then Redskins beat the Cowboys. They are calling, and I've noticed this on social media, and I'm going to rant a little for a second here. Younger people are saying, and maybe it was, maybe you can make the case that it was, but younger people say that Washington beating Dallas January 22nd, 1983, to advance to the Super Bowl was the greatest home experience in the history of RFK Stadium. It's there. It's right there. But I would suggest, and maybe you're too young to remember this, but when Washington beat Dallas New Year's Eve 1972, just over 10 years earlier, that was pretty amazing. I mean, that was an era where you didn't have seven teams from each conference making the playoffs. You had the division winners, and you had one wild card team, and that was it. That was it. And so now the playoffs have been expanded the way that they have, and even then it was an odd year because that was the strike year, so you had eight teams from each conference making the playoffs. I don't want to diminish that Super Bowl championship, but it was a little bit different. And when Washington went to the Super Bowl after the 72 season and they blew out the Cowboys 26-3 and the fans came storming out of the stands and people partied all night in Georgetown. I mean, that was unbelievable. You know, we remember the stadium shaking for sure in 1983. But let's not diminish that before we want to crown that as the greatest home game ever at RFK Stadium. And it's right there. Realized there was one 10 years earlier, which was pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. But anyway, that was played on a Saturday. It's the last time that a championship game was played on a Saturday, and a lot of that had to do with the fact, and this is, again, how television has changed, because they'll move heaven and earth now to put an NFL game on. But that's when the NFC was on CBS. And believe it or not, CBS had programming that they felt they had to run on Sunday, and therefore they had to put the championship game on Saturday. They didn't want to interfere with the commitment they had to whatever programming it was, and I have no idea what it was, but it couldn't have been as big as the NFL. But they said, okay, we're not going to move them, so you're going to have to play Saturday. And the reason that the schedule had to be jumbled up like that was because they didn't really plan on having championship games that weekend. That was going to be the bye week between the championships and the Super Bowl, but because the strike knocked out 2 months and they had to reschedule everything so that they could fit in as many games as they could, that's why there were NFL games that weekend. But NBC, which at the time was televising the AFC, they didn't have that issue, so they had what's now known as the Mud Bowl, the game between the Dolphins and the Jets, and it had rained all week at the Orange Bowl and around Miami, and to this day, there are people from the Jets who are still angry that Don Shula didn't cover the field at the Orange Bowl when, in fact, it wasn't his call. The Orange Bowl was owned by the city. They chose not to cover the field. The game was played in the mud. A.J. Dewey had three interceptions for Miami, and the Dolphins won the game 14-0, went to the Super Bowl. We'll get to that more in the next hour, but let's continue with the playoffs and what happened yesterday in Buffalo, which, you know, it was disappointing, obviously, for a number of reasons for the Bills in that they thought this was going to be their year. I mean, they really were feeling that, and they were considered to be the team to beat. Remember, Cincinnati started off the year 0-2, and there were rumors that Zach Taylor was on the hot seat there. And then, obviously, they turned things around and have been the hottest team in the league now. I think that's 13 straight wins for them. Representative of how disappointing it was yesterday, and I don't know if you caught this, they picked it up on the camera, and Tony Romo made a comment about this. In the fourth quarter, you see Stephon Diggs on the sideline yelling at Josh Allen and raising his arms in the air, and Allen's got a Parker around him, and he's looking down at his iPad trying to trying to, you know, defuse the whole thing. And clearly, Diggs is really upset. After they lose the game 27-10, according to The Athletic, Diggs sprinted out of the locker room with all of his things before some of Buffalo's coaching staff even made it down the tunnel that leads to the locker room. Veteran running back Duke Johnson, who's on the Bills practice squad, escorted his teammate back to the locker room before he once again darted out and left Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park, New York for good on Sunday. This guy was a team captain last year and this year, and he's angry because I guess he wasn't targeted enough. He caught four passes for 35 yards. He was targeted 10 times, but only two of those targets happened in the fourth quarter when the Bills were down 27-10. He is, by all accounts, the greatest receiver who ever played for the Bills. Andre Reed's in the Hall of Fame, but he's been more productive. His three seasons rank as the top three seasons in team history in terms of catches. 2020, 1,500 receiving yards, 2020, almost 1,500 receiving yards, and the two highest single-season receiving yard totals in Bills history. 11 touchdowns this season tied the team's single-season receiving touchdown records with Bill Brooks, who had 11 in 1995. He is under a contract extension that he signed in April, $96 million. So he's under contract to the Bills through 2027, when he'll be 34 years old. I don't know if this is going to lead to an ouster, but it's going to cost them money if they do that. And, you know, to come off a year where you have 108 catches, 11 touchdowns, and then to be not as much of a factor as obviously he would have liked yesterday against the Bengals, that's obviously made him very angry. So monitor that if you're watching the unhappy wide receiver market, because, you know, he has been a good citizen. And even there was a play early in the game where he tried to catch a pass out of bounds and tumbled into a woman who was working the sidelines, knocked her over, and he was even a little shaken up on the play. And before he went back on the field, he stopped to see if she was okay. I thought, oh, real mensch there. But you don't behave like that when you're a team captain. You don't openly, because the cameras are picking everything up, you don't openly yell at your quarterback on the sideline and then don't even go in the locker room with your teammates, take all your stuff and leave. Another player has to escort you back and you leave again. And that's a team captain. You know, you got to be there in good times and bad times. And yesterday, Diggs looked like he abandoned ship. Cowboys yesterday. Oh, my. Oh, my. Dak Prescott, as good as he looked against Tampa, he looked really bad yesterday. Dak Prescott with two interceptions in this game. And you know, he's their franchise guy. He's the guy that's making the money. But 23 of 37, 206 yards and a touchdown, two interceptions. Not good. This was Prescott talking to the media after the game.
Just disappointing. As I said, I mean, guys that played their asses off, defense who gave us an opportunity to win this game, who played hard against a really, really good offense, a really good team, and for us to only put up the points that we did, that's unacceptable, and it starts with me, and I've got to be better. I mean, that's no other way to sugarcoat it.
Got to say that, you know, put it on yourself, but, you know, how many more of these can they take? And, you know, Jerry Jones is 80 years old. And Prescott, who has been fairly good at hanging on to the ball, he's never had more than 13 interceptions in a season, going back to 2017. That's when he had the 13. This year he had 15 interceptions, most in the league, and he missed five games because of a fractured thumb. That's got to turn around. And I don't know, is he going to turn it around with Mike McCarthy as the head coach? Looks like, at least for next year, he will try that. Jerry Jones asked before the Tampa game that if the Cowboys lost, would McCarthy be fired? And first he said absolutely not, and then sort of moonwalked a little back on that. They won the game, so McCarthy survives for another week. But now you wonder, you know, with an exit like this, with a team that looked like it might be ready at least to get to the NFC Championship game, which they have not done since they won the Super Bowl 27 years ago, is he the coach that's going to come back? Todd Archer covers the Cowboys for ESPN, asked about the status of McCarthy.
Jerry Jones was asked after the game if there's anything with Mike's job, and he said no. So there's nothing that's going to happen there, barring some unforeseen surprise that you know, Jerry wakes up and feels differently than he did right after the game, which I guess theoretically could happen. But, you know, if you take Jerry at his word, then Mike McCarthy would be this team's coach this next season, and we'll see if the coordinators are back.
Yeah, well, that's what you usually do when you have a disappointing season. You don't fire the coach, you change the coordinators, a la Washington, where Scott Turner is out. And looks like they're having trouble hiring a coordinator. We'll get to more on that coming up. So, looks like McCarthy's going to be back with Dak Prescott. I don't know. Zeke Elliott is they've got a number of unrestricted free agents, including Tony Pollard, who hurt his ankle yesterday. He actually broke his leg in that game, and I'm sure he'll be recovered in time for next season. But do you bring him back with the big money that you're paying Zeke Elliott when Pollard is probably the more explosive back? And they got a lot of questions. You know, it's always good to revel in the misery of the Dallas Cowboys, and yesterday they had their miseries. As for what we saw from San Francisco and the defense, and as good as Brock Purdy is, and remarkable for a guy who's now played, what, 7 games and was the last player drafted. He was a 4-year starter at Iowa State. You know, people forget that, and I think that's important. But nobody expected this. And, you know, not that he was spectacular yesterday, but certainly good enough to win when Dak Prescott was not. And Prescott is that franchise guy with the big contract. The guy's been around the league for a long time, and Purdy is just getting started. But this team, San Francisco, there's a lot of guys, I think, who could quarterback them and get them this far. Not everybody could do it, and maybe Jimmy Garoppolo, had he stayed healthy, wouldn't have been able to do this. But Purdy is doing this partly because of the weapons he has. Christian McCaffrey, one of the great midseason trades ever, just terrific yesterday, and we'll hear his conversation with Scott Van Pelt in the next hour. This is Tim Hasselbeck, played here in Washington, been a long time analyst for ESPN, with Scott Van Pelt last night on just how good this 49er defense is.
Well, listen, they have so much speed. I mean, I think that's the key. They have speed and they can play zone coverage. And so when you play zone, you have your eyes on the quarterback and you're reading him. And I thought that's really where Dak got into a lot of trouble. You know, this one, he's late to Gallup. And so Lenore is able to jump the route. This one, he's actually a man, but he's able to jump the route. And then the one to Ward here, this is zone. He's just reading eyes. Ward should make the play, but Warner is there to make it. And so I think between, you know, the rush that they have, because they can get after the quarterback rushing four, their ability to play zone just creates problems for opposing quarterbacks.
Yeah, and as we saw earlier in the show, I mean, the one deep shot where he actually had some time and had Gallup, he wasn't able to connect there. And San Francisco moves on. And I go back to earlier in the year, Tim, when Lance got hurt, you say, you know what, for this year's team, Garoppolo might be better suited for this year's team. Then when he got hurt, by that point, you say, you know what? They can win with Purdy, and you've been spot on in both cases. What do you think Shanahan learned about Purdy in this game and where his confidence is as he takes it on the road into Philly, where I think he might even have to be better?
I think he's got complete trust in him, Scott. Like, total trust, as if he's been a 7-year starter. I mean, I think that's exactly how he feels about Purdy. Because look at these situations. Like late in the game, they start the drive throwing the football when they end up in the field. A third down, what do? Third and three, you could run it with that run game? No, they're throwing the football. They actually get into empty later and throw it to McCaffrey. Another situation here, kind of got to have it, 4-minute drive situation. They're throwing the football. Like, a lot of coaches don't do that with guys that are Pro Bowl quarterbacks. Shanahan's doing it with Purdy. And I would say this, just to be clear about Brock Purdy. You know, there was a point where he just was distributing it to the talented players around him. He now is creating offense for them. Like, you look at the big play to Kittle that led to a touchdown. That's a reaction play where he throws it back over the middle. Like, that is a play that young players don't typically make. He's been outstanding.
Is he their quarterback? Like, I don't mean tomorrow. I mean, is he their quarterback?
You know what, Scott? Like, I thought, you know, hey, he's going to have to win a Super Bowl to prove that. I don't know. I mean, he's 7-0. He's thrown 14 touchdowns and 2 picks, and he's done it in some of the biggest moments. He hasn't flinched in the biggest moments. So it's going to be a tough task against this Philadelphia defense. Yep. Their pass rush is better, but, man, he's been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if they get to the Super Bowl, never mind win the Super Bowl, but they get to the Super Bowl with Brock Purdy? What do you do next year? I guess you still have Trey Lance. Garoppolo's gone. Do you have them battle it out in camp? You might. You might. And one thing about Lance, he's proven that when given the opportunity to play, he doesn't stay healthy. Purdy, so far, has done that. And it's, you know, like what's happening here, that, you know, at some point, he may have to stop chasing that guy and kind of develop what you got. And maybe that's going to happen here with Sam Howell, and maybe it's Brock Purdy, and maybe next year in the NFL, here's two guys in their second year, one a seventh-round pick and one a fifth-round pick, who are entrenched as the starting quarterbacks for their team. It's a copycat league, and once it works one way, you'll see other people go in that direction too. I'll have to see. As far as the defense of the 49ers, Kent Babb, I believe, was it Kent Babb that wrote this on Sunday, yesterday, I guess it came out on Saturday. It's a Kent Babb story about D'Amico Ryans, who's the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, and very well respected. And they even made mention of this on the broadcast yesterday, that four teams are seeking to interview him for head coaching positions. The question is, what's he going to do? And there is the possibility that he could turn everything down. He's a 38-year-old African-American who's leading a great defense, has done a fabulous job, and everybody believes he will eventually become a head coach. The problem is, if you take a job where you can't win, and he does seem to be the front runner for the Texans, he played there, he's got a youth home there, he's got a lot of ties to the Houston area, but we've seen them in the last 2 years kind of use older African-Americans to tank. David Culley got 1 year. Lovie Smith got 1 year. Lovie Smith delivered a middle finger out the door by coming back to beat the Colts in a game that, had they lost, they would have had the number one pick. And Culley was asked about the possibility of D'Amico Ryans going there, and he warned this. He said, it's a good old boy thing, and there's a little bit of old racism there, that sentiment of, can they do it, meaning the Texans. He said, I wouldn't discourage him from going there. I would never discourage an African-American from getting an opportunity of being a head coach at a place, even that place. So does he want to go to Houston, where, again, played there, has a name there, and has, you know, ties for a youth home that he runs? But, you know, again, you don't want to fail in your first go round. You get another opportunity in most cases. People will look at it, but it's harder and harder if you don't go to the right opportunity. So, you know, he'll have to look and see what's out there. They mentioned that he had four interviews scheduled on Saturday and only did two of them because he needed to get ready for the game. And I believe the two that he turned down were Houston and Indianapolis, that he talked to Arizona and Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe Denver was one of them. But his name is in there, and it's got to be in there. This is another part of the process. Because of the Rooney Rule, you have to interview African-Americans. And I'm sure he doesn't want to be in a situation where he's being used so that they just fulfill the Rooney Rule and then they can move on and hire who they want to go. But here's what Babb says about D'Amico Ryans as a coach. What Ryans is, players and coaches said, is a generational motivator, people manager, and selfless leader who is capable of drawing greatness out of humans. If the game plan isn't working, Ryan doesn't bail on it. He just pushes the right buttons to fire up his guys, and suddenly the 49ers' fortunes change. Gary Kubiak, who is white and won a Super Bowl in his second chance as a head coach, and Vance Joseph, who is black and has received no second opportunity, said Ryan's skill set is what actually lifts organizations and leads teams to compete for titles. And Ryan is seen as a natural fit in Houston because, he spends off seasons there, and his investment in the community. But Babb writes this at the end of the story. It's unclear what Ryans will do on whether even he'll be offered a head coaching job. Friends and colleagues indicate he doesn't need the money, seems happy in San Francisco, is too smart and talented and popular with the 49ers to just leap into some troublesome position to try and prove himself and his way against history. Then again, that's something Ryans has done time and time again. You know, talked earlier in the story about how he overcame various issues growing up and so forth, and has gotten to this position at a very young age to be a very successful defensive coordinator at 38 for a team that could be going to the Super Bowl is very impressive. Plus, you know, he's working with a coach who gets the whole picture. You know, Kyle Shanahan is emerging as one of the best coaches in the league. And he's known, he's already got the reputation as the best play caller. And to be able to work alongside him and pick up those things and realize, you know, the kind of person, if he does get a head coaching job, that he'd want to hire as an offensive coordinator, all that plays into it. So that'll be one of the stories of Super Bowl week. If they get there, what's going to happen with DeMeco Ryans? Is DeMeco Ryans going to stick around, or is he going to be gone? You know, I remember going to that Super Bowl that the Bears played. The Bears had arguably the best defense of all time. This was in New Orleans when they played New England, and they just blew their doors off, and everybody knew that Buddy Ryans was going to Philadelphia. And I remember going in the locker room after the game and talking to Chicago players, and all the defensive guys wanted to do was talk about how much they love Buddy Ryans. Buddy Ryan, not DeMeco Ryans. Buddy Ryan, not Ryans. And they talked about how the night before the game that Buddy said to all his players, "I love you guys." And supposedly it was either Dan Hampton or Steve McMichael that picked up a chair and threw it at the wall, and it stuck. So these guys, you know, all the head coaches get all the credit. But when you got a defensive team like San Francisco, don't overlook the coordinator. And DeMeco Ryans looks like he's one of the best.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
The Andy Pollin Show.
We got to go after this with everything we got. They're going to come with everything they got.
I'll start off by saying I'm bored, I'm broke, and I'm back.
The Andy Pollin Show on ESPN 630 starts right now.
Hey, we got our final four. You only call it that in college basketball. It works for every other sport. You know, we have the American League Championship Series, the National League Championship Series in baseball. Why don't we call that the Final Four? Basketball, Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals. We have those long handles. It's the Final Four. Football, we got the NFC Championship game and the AFC Championship game. It's the Final Four. Out of next weekend, two teams are going to go play in the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. It's that simple. And then that's the end of football. And I don't know what I'm going to do with my weekends. Last two have been totally engulfed with football. We had the extra games the previous weekend where you had, the four games. And then you had one day you had three. Well, over the course of 2 days, you had five games, and then you had the Monday night game. And then this past week was a little bit more manageable. Though, when it's a football day, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday, and I understand that you have to have the primetime games, and I understand that there's a lot more money in that, and they want to kick these games off so that they get the primetime audience. But when it's a football day, there should be action at 1 o'clock. It just feels weird. So you're sitting around, waiting for the game to start. And when it's 4:30, yesterday wasn't so bad. They started at 3 o'clock and gave me a chance to watch the Maryland game. In fact, I missed the first touchdown that Cincinnati had because I was watching the end of the Maryland game where they made it close. They just their three-point shooting is bad. And when you play at Purdue, you don't get the friendly whistle. Twice as many free throws yesterday for Purdue. And Maryland just doesn't shoot the three well enough, 3 for 21 yesterday. Though they did get some Julian Reese played well. I mean, Zach Edey is maybe the best player in the country, 7'4". But at the end of the game, they were keeping him away from the basket and at least made it close. Maryland lost by three. But they've got to find a way to shoot better. You just can't shoot 3 for 21, and they have not been a good three-point shooting team all year long. But anyway, I got a chance to watch all that. So the football started at 3 o'clock, and the night game, very manageable yesterday, so it kicks off at 6:30, and it's over before 10 o'clock. I can deal with all that. But it just seems like as the day goes on, like you've carved out your day for football, and it should be like a regular Sunday where you know at 1 o'clock we got games. And we used to have, and for many years this is the way it worked, they would kick off either the AFC or the NFC at 12:30 to clear out for 4 o'clock. and you play at 4 o'clock, and then all the football's over by 7. Doesn't work that way anymore. The night stuff is huge. So we're going to have a 3 o'clock game next week, and then we're going to have a 6:30 game. So rinse, repeat for next Sunday. That's going to work. A lot of thoughts from the weekend. I'm sure you have them as well. Seeing the Dallas Cowboys lose, to me, is never a bad thing. But I thought there was a little bit too much of this from the Cincinnati Bengals. And what's being quoted most is what Joe Burrow said in the post-game interview, where he said something like they have to give back the money, like they owe refunds. And they were all caught up in how they were disrespected because during the week, the league announced that they were selling tickets for a potential AFC championship game in Atlanta between Buffalo and Cincinnati. Now, they've never done this before, and these were extenuating circumstances. We won't have, hopefully, a circumstance like this again. But they had to do something, and just saying, well, you know, too bad, the game's in Kansas City, suck on and like it, Buffalo. They weren't going to do that. It wasn't going to happen. So they came up with this. And also, it's probably going to lead to more games scheduled like this. The neutral field AFC and NFC championship games probably are going to happen. You know, snow falling in Buffalo and what we may have in Kansas City next week, Green Bay. Those games may not happen anymore. That they'll all be indoors or on warm weather sites, and we're not going to have any of this. And one of the things that Albert Breer has in his SI column today is these could serve as dress rehearsals for Super Bowl sites, that you could see the league having bids put in from cities to host the championship games so that they would be in line for the Super Bowl. Like you do it a year in advance, like the year before you're going to host the Super Bowl, you host a conference championship game just to see how things go, get the kinks out. And then by the time you get to the Super Bowl, you're ready. You know, if that had happened with Jacksonville, I don't know if we would have had a Super Bowl. That's the worst sight I've ever seen. They gave Jacksonville a Super Bowl. This would have been, I think, January, February 2005, if I'm not mistaken. And the reason they gave it to them was that the Jaguars balked at the expansion fee to join the league when they came in 1994. And the league said, okay, we'll throw in a Super Bowl, which they did. And the city's just too small for it. They had to bring in cruise ships for people to stay in hotels there. The downtown is so small, you couldn't get around. You had to walk, because if you took a cab, you were in gridlock for hours. There weren't enough restaurants. The Eagle fans drove down. They drove down from Philadelphia, slept in their cars. I mean, it was just a mess, just an absolute mess. But, you know, Atlanta would be a city that can handle it. And I guess they have either, I think they have hosted a Super Bowl, or certainly will with that new stadium. The indoor stadium. But that would be how that would work. It'd be a dress rehearsal. But this was Burrow in the news conference afterwards. And this, you know, continued to be, you know, you had Zach Taylor, the coach of the team, with a very snarky remark. In fact, I'll play it for you here. This is what Zach Taylor said to the media about them screwing up the plans for this neutral site game.
We had our mindset to go play in Kansas City, and it is tough because they have to formulate the plans for coin tosses, and they got to formulate the plans for neutral site games, and we just keep screwing it up for everybody, and I hate that for people that have to endure all those logistical issues, and then we just keep screwing it up. So I'm sorry.
Hardy har har har. This is Joe Burrow with more on that in the post game news conference.
What about the whole refund thing? Was that an axe for you guys to grind? They were already selling tickets to another game, and did you guys use it?
They got to do what they got to do. I wouldn't say we used it as motivation, but I definitely knew about it.
Okay, well, that's fine. But you know, Mike Greenberg said something. What did Greenberg say? It was along the lines of, oh well, you know, people underestimated how motivated they were because they felt disrespected by the league. You know, stop with that. Because if you go into a game thinking, well, the motivation we need is because the league did us wrong, that they actually announced that they were going to be selling tickets before the game, you got to work out the logistics. This is why they have 2 weeks between the championship games and the Super Bowl. A lot of stuff that has to get done. And because they were selling tickets online, that was disrespectful for the Bengals. It was a contingency plan. And nowadays, you know, you don't have to mail back a check. It's just a credit card transaction. So calm down about that. Yeah, you can use that, I guess, and you can talk about it. But it really, I don't think, was as big a deal as has been made out to be. And if the Bengals needed all that to play as well as they did yesterday, really, you know, dominated the game. They really did. I mean, I never really felt that Buffalo was threatening. They got to within seven, but on that field where you really couldn't have a lot of explosiveness, they just never got going. And Cincinnati, they ran the football. Joe Mixon averaged over 5 yards a carry in that game. They were totally dominant on the ground, which is really what the story of Philadelphia was on Saturday night against the Giants when they won 38-7. You had Jalen Hurts throwing for 154 yards. They had 240 yards rushing, or close to it, 234, I think. And they just bulldozed them. That was the game there. So, you know, in this time of year, they say, you know, play good defense, run the ball. Well, we saw that both from Philadelphia and we saw that from Cincinnati yesterday. Christian McCaffrey, this is probably, it may be the greatest midseason deal ever made, where San Francisco at midseason got McCaffrey out of Carolina, and he has been huge for them, as he was yesterday. And McCaffrey talked about the performance after the 49ers win with Scott Van Pelt.
You know, it was awesome. Just seeing guys like Joe Montana and Jerry Rice. Kyle gave a history lesson of, you know, the games between the Niners and the Cowboys, I think later in the week. And just to understand what this kind of game means, especially this late in the year. So it was an ugly win, but it was a win, and was happy to get it done.
Ugly, maybe. I'd say it's a playoff win. I you could describe far better than I. I've never played in a playoff game, Christian. Just how different is playoff football the deeper you get into the playoffs?
Well, you know, I'm still learning, you know, and I don't like to make a whole lot of blanket statements right after games. I'll wait and watch the tape, but you know, you said it best. The biggest thing in playoff football is just to get the win, however you can, by any means necessary. And the defense did a great job all day. You know, we got the offense rolling, moving the ball a little bit more in the second half, and it took care of the ball. So it was big, and it was a great team win, but definitely a gritty playoff win.
Yeah, but I've heard a coach say a long time ago, there's no such thing as an ugly playoff win in the National Football League. I'm sure you would agree with that.
That's true.
Now you get a chance to take it on the road,
yeah,
and go into Philly. And I'm sure you've been asked, Christian, a million different ways, the same question I'm going to ask, and it's about Brock Purdy. Here's this young man. It's still new to him. This is his first start against an NFC team on the road, right? But when you look at him, he never looks phased. What do you see in his eyes in the huddle during these games?
Yeah, he's got a killer instinct. He's calm, but he's extremely confident. He's everything you would want in your quarterback. He demands the huddle. He's patient. He's hard on himself. He's able to extend plays, and he's been an impressive rookie. Not even a rookie anymore, but he's an impressive player to watch and share the huddle with.
All right, last thought. I've asked a bunch about the offensive side. The guys you see and go up against in practice, and the type of confidence, Christian, that it helps create for the team to have when you know you can lean into the strength that is that defense. How do you describe that side of the football?
They're monsters, man. They fly to the ball. They swarm to the ball. They take so much pride in everything that they do. It's so fun to watch. It's fun to be a part of. I'm very happy they're on our side. But it's just, you see it every day, not just in the way that they play on Sundays. You see it in the way they watch tape, the way they lift weights, the way they train together, the way they do all this extra stuff, and it shows on Sunday. So definitely happy they're on our side.
That's Christian McCaffrey. Now, he did catch 6 passes for 22 yards. He ran the ball 10 times for 35 and scored a touchdown. And Purdy was good. I wouldn't say he was great, but he did enough, and he didn't turn the ball over. He was 19 of 29 for 214 yards passing and no touchdowns. But that's what the 49ers were able to do by running the football effectively. They ran for 113 yards and threw for just under 200. And they held the ball. You know, they had time of possession. They held it for almost 33 minutes, which made a huge difference in that game. But, you know, San Francisco isn't where they are if they don't make that move at midseason to pick him up. And he talked at the beginning about the legends that were there, and I'm sure you saw if you're watching the game, you know, Joe Montana and Jerry Rice and, you know, all those guys coming back for the big party, the last home game that San Francisco will play this year because they have to go on the road in Philadelphia. You know, my close reputation has been, I think, exaggerated by Tony Kornheiser, but it's not totally off. I mean, I do wear a lot of logoed clothing, let's face it, and I don't spend a lot of money on clothes. He has promoted this thing that's not true. He says I have a $200 a year clothing budget. That's not quite the case, but I don't spend a lot on clothes because I'm on the radio and I don't really have to dress up for work. And I wear a suit, you know, two or three times a year, so it's not a big deal. But I did notice Joe Montana, and I put this out on Twitter. Of course, I got killed for it. But Montana shows up on the sidelines, and he's wearing, it looks like he's signed a deal with JCPenney, because he's wearing like these sneakers. Somebody said they're Chucks, though he used to have a deal with Skechers. They look like the cheapo sneakers that you used to buy, like the PF Flyers, or the one that your mother would buy at Supergiant. Remember Supergiant on Rockville Pike? You could buy discounted clothes there, buy anything there. That's what it looked like. And then this like flannel shirt. And I thought, that's Joe Montana. He's dressing like he's 12 years old. What's the deal there? And then Jerry Rice had this neck pendant with almost a full-size 49ers gold-encrusted helmet around. I mean, look, far be it from me to criticize fashion. My only question about Montana is that the new thing? Like, is he setting a fashion trend? And Joe's older than I am. Joe's in his mid to late 60s. So maybe that's something that is the new thing, that you show up in cheap-looking sneakers and a flannel shirt on the sidelines. I just thought, you know, you're Joe Montana. Maybe something else. I don't know. You don't wear your jersey, obviously. And then somebody put out, hey, why is he wearing your credential? Well, yeah, I mean, he's Joe Montana. He should be able to walk anywhere he wants in the stadium, but the security guards, you know, they're probably under 30 years old. Last time Joe Montana played in a game was 1994. So the likelihood that everybody would recognize him is not there. Look, even John Madden, you remember this? John Madden, if you watch the old NFL films on the sidelines with the Raiders, he's got his credential around his wrist. Yeah, or tied to his belt. You know, even John Madden, one of the most recognizable coaches ever, even for home games, wore his credentials. You don't want to get stopped. You don't want some guy with his walkie-talkie, we got a big man here, says he's the coach of the Raiders. Can we check that out? No, they just want to be able to move from place to place. As for moving on, the 49ers, again, heading to Philadelphia, where they are 2.5-point underdogs for the 3 o'clock game on Sunday. Lewis Riddick on with Scott Van Pelt, also talking about what's ahead for them and how Brock Purdy, while he has been good so far and winning a game at home, now has to go into Philadelphia and get that done on Sunday.
There's no question offensively. Like, I know we're going to keep saying this word clean game. There's no doubt he has to do that. Mm-hmm. You cannot turn it over against this defense. Punting is your friend, especially when you have a defense like this that's going to need to do this. Achilles heel for Philadelphia's turnovers. Mm-hmm. When they lose that turnover battle, that's when they've got themselves into trouble, which means this. San Francisco's defense, when you're talking about identity, that's how this team is built. It's defense first, run game, play action, passing game. That's how it goes. Defense, you got to give them some extra possessions, and you got to give them extra possessions in plus territory. Because if you don't, you're right. I don't know if you can expect Brock Purdy to deal with this pass rush that's really 8 deep and a run game themselves that will give San Francisco all they can handle. So really, the strengths of this football team, how they've been built, strong down the middle, has to show up in this game. And you must, D'Amico Ryans, you must get your boys to turn the ball over, mm-hmm. or you won't win this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. Philadelphia didn't come close to doing that on Saturday night. They were just dominant. They just ran it up and down the field. I don't think they're going to be able to do that against the 49ers. In fact, I'm sure they won't, because their linebackers are tremendous. And I think that this will be a close game. I think it'll be a low-scoring game, kind of like the way the 49ers won yesterday. And what Lewis Riddick is saying about punting the football, you know, as great a genius as Bill Walsh was, he used to preach that all the time. Don't take a chance on turnover. It's okay. We get another shot. Punt the football, get it back, and live for another day. And that may be a lot of what Kyle Shanahan preaches as he gets his team ready to play in Philadelphia on Sunday.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
The Andy Polin Show on ESPN 630, the sports capital.
We got Tony coming up at 11 o'clock today, and I'm sure he'll be talking about the four playoff games over the weekend. Only one game had a lead change. That was the 49ers and the Cowboys. Otherwise, even the game that was close between Jacksonville and Kansas City didn't have a lead change. Kansas City led the whole game. Philadelphia, of course, winning in a blowout yesterday. And Cincinnati dominating on the road, getting it done on the road, as that was the only game of the weekend where the road team won. We'll talk more about that. Let's interrupt the football yak, though, for a minute or so and get to some basketball. Rui Hachimura, who has been okay. You know, he was Tommy Shepard's first round draft pick. When Shepard took over 4 years ago, he took Rui Hachimura out of Gonzaga. And over the course of the 4 years here, he's been kind of up and down and has had some personal issues, missed a whole bunch of games last year, has dealt with injuries, but his statistics have been pretty consistent. Over the course of his career, he's 13 points a game, averaging 5 rebounds, 1.4 assists, plays less than 30 minutes a game, and has had a couple of breakout games like he did on Saturday. He had 30 points, which matched a career high. They're playing Orlando, of course. But he's been good, not great, coming off the bench. And his actual, you know, his numbers are down a little bit this year for rebounds. He had been averaging 5.1 for his career, 4.3 this year. But what you get from him is double digits most nights coming off the bench. And that's apparently something that he's not happy with. And The Athletic reported that he is being shopped around, that he's made it clear that he doesn't want to play here. And then asked about that report from The Athletic Saturday night after his big performance. First he said no comment. And then he said, I just want to be somewhere that wants me as a basketball player. I want to be somewhere that likes my game. You know, I want to be somewhere that trusts and believes in me. Asked whether he believes the Wizards want him, whether they trust and believe in him. Hachimura was again cagey, said, we're going to find out. When he was drafted, there was some thought, okay, this is Ted and his marketing, you know, the international marketing, because he's from Japan, and there's a lot of coverage of that. The team had launched a Japanese website. They hired a Japanese correspondent, and the feeling was, okay, this is another marketing thing, though he had been a good player on a good team at Gonzaga, and the feeling was, you know, maybe he can develop into the kind of power forward that they're looking for. He played in his 40th game the other night, and remember he had an absence because of personal reasons, and then had missed 16 games because of an ankle injury. So, you know, he has not been great, but he hasn't been a bust. But if he wants out of here, you know, that's fine, because you're not gonna pay him. They've done this in the past where they've had guys coming up for free agency, and they don't. They do either do pay him, like in the case of Davis Bertans, the 5-year, $80 million contract, which turned out to be a mistake. And then, you know, they've given the moon to Bradley Beal, who is a great player, but he's been in and out of the lineup with hamstring trouble. And has yet to really, at least this year, you watch him and you say, well, that guy's spectacular, you know, or he'll have a game where he'll have, like, you know, 50 points. And there have been 50-point games all over the league this year. Now, maybe it's the hamstring trouble that is keeping him from doing that. But to me, I'm not going to get worked up about Rui Hachimura. Rui Hachimura is just another guy that they've run in and out of here. Coming up, Tony's got a show, and I'll be back tomorrow with a 3-hour show. We usually have Max Kellerman on Tuesday, so hopefully we'll have Max tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have you. We'll see you at 9 a.m.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.